fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian, and I'm here with Corey and Paul, and we've been away for a long time.
Yes, we have.
And I've been wanting to get us all together just to shoot the shit, I guess, just see what's going on out there in the world of nerddom, because I've been kind of busy, too, and not paying attention a lot, and I don't know. I mean, I had some topics to discuss, but there's something kind of sticking in my craw right now. Well, not sticking in my craw, but I kind of had a revelation last night, and I felt I should share it with you guys and see how it goes.
Okay, let's deal with your revelation first.
Well, Paul, you saw the Evil Dead remake, right? I saw that on Facebook.
Absolutely.
And what did you think of that?
You know, there was a lot to love about it. It was, I think it's really cool to see sort of the state of the art in practical effects right now. You know, it was really well done. It was not, you know, the Evil Dead that, you know, we all know and love.
Sure.
You know, it's its own thing. But, you know, it was still a lot of fun. And it really, again, underscored to me, like, the importance of practical effect, because, like, I actually felt, you know, different in some of the things than I would have had it been a CG effect, you know.
So they didn't use any CG, any computer generated effects?
There's some. I think particularly like in the some of the optical effects, like the characters' eyes, you know, I think are digitally altered in a few shots and things like that. But it's really sparing, and the CG is mostly used to blend the practical effects in with the real stuff.
It's really cool.
I mean, you know, it did really well, which I'm kind of happy about, because, you know, it shows that there's a future market for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, I think as long as you sort of take it as the fact that it's, you know, that it's a modern, you know, it's sort of an update on the 80s movie, you know. It throws in a few homages and things like that, but it's definitely its own thing.
Is it the same story, though, like plot-wise?
Yeah.
It's very similar. Okay. Although, you know, what it's kind of funny is that they sort of play with your expectations. They do set up one character to be sort of an Ash-type character who ends up, you know, sort of not being that character. Yeah, it's a very, you know, it's a similar thing of, you know, the five people go to the cabin in the woods, they find the Necronomicon, they read it, you know, chaos ensues.
Right.
Well, so you would say, did you have fun, like, with it? Like, so you didn't hate it?
No, I did not hate it. I had a fun time.
Oh, because a lot of the reviews were kind of like, oh, this kind of sucks. And I was psyched to see it. And
I had a great time. You know, I went with my friend Homer, and, you know, we're both, like, Sam Raimi fans.
Is he yellow?
I'm sorry?
Is he one
yellow?
Of the Simpsons?
Your friend Homer?
Oh, no. Well, he's Asian. I don't know if you're...
Oh, that's messed up. Oh. The racism. The racism on the part-time... Like,
oh, my God. It's that country song, Accidental Racism. I just
Corey.
Did it.
Corey's getting it. Well, the whole reason I wanted to ask you about that is because, I mean, last night I was watching the Total Recall remake on cable. And have either of you guys seen that? Like... Oh. No. Yeah, and then a couple of weeks before that, I watched The Thing remake, and I just am sitting there, you know, like, it's funny because I've had discussions about The Thing remake, or a prequel, right?
Right.
Did you see that one, Paul or Corey?
I did.
Yeah, and what'd you think of it? Because...
I thought it was not very good.
No. I mean,
It was okay, but I mean, it really did, it just... It didn't engage me the way the first one did, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, not at all. And that's the really interesting thing with Total Recall last night and The Thing. And I'm watching these on cable more out of curiosity than anything else. You know, I get a couple, like an hour hour and a half of peace, you know,
yeah.
to myself. And I'm like, oh, what's on cable? What's on Netflix? Oh, I was curious about those. And the thing that astounds me about these is the fact that they're really well shot. They look really nice. They've got good actors. I mean, decent actors in them. I mean, you know, you could debate. Some people could maybe debate on some of the actors in Total Recall remake, mm-hmm. you know. But they lack, like, tension. And just, yeah. you don't get absorbed in anything. It's just, and I'm astounded by that because you think that, like, CG or technology or the amount of money that's being poured into this crap would just elevate the bar, but it doesn't. It just drags it down.
You would think so, but I mean, you know, like, there's a lot of things, like, okay, here's the reason why I have no interest in the Total Recall thing.
Well, yeah.
Lynn Wiseman is no Paul Verhoeven. You know
no,
what I mean?
He's not.
Paul Verhoeven, like, you know, that dude understands, like, you know, satire. I mean, his movies work on a lot of different levels.
Sure.
And with Lynn Wiseman, usually if his movies work, they're working on, like, a single level.
Yeah.
You know? Colin Farrell's great, you know? Like, yeah. I love him in Bruges and everything like that.
Yeah.
But as far as a leading man, he's no Schwarzenegger, you know?
Well, and this is part of what brings me to my revelation a little bit, like, because I was watching Total Recall last night, and, you know, it's my whole thing of, they don't use everyman anymore in movies, you know? They don't
right.
use guys or even women that look like regular people at all, like, in lead roles anymore. It's, they're either, I mean, unless it's like a comedy or unless it's, you know...
Yeah, everyone's, like, hyper-glamorous. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nobody...
I get it.
Yeah, and Colin Farrell, you know, the dude is ripped. I mean, he's a good-looking guy. He's, you know, he's ripped. I mean, he works out a lot. Like, Wolverine. Like, what's-his-face? Hugh Jackman. They work out. They exercise a
lot. Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger was, like, a bodybuilder, you know. That was.
I know, but here's where I've got you, okay? Colin Farrell... Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger is not handsome. Like, you look at his face, and he's not like a Robert Red... Like, he's not like a pretty boy. He looks like a guy that you would see at the gym. Same thing with Stallone. So,
right.
even though he's, like, muscular, Schwarzenegger and Stallone, they look like some guy that you would... That is just a regular guy that you would see at the gym. And Schwarzenegger's even helped by his accent. So he, as ridiculous as this sounds... is non-threatening to the audience, you know? He's mm-hmm. got the accent, so you think you've got something won over on him there. He's not really handsome. I mean, he's got the angular jaw because he's built, but he's not like, hey, ladies. I'm like... And Colin Farrell and a lot of these guys like Ryan Reynolds and, you know, they're pretty boys. So when a male audience goes to see what should be an action movie that they're going to really like... You know, just speaking like in generalization, general terms, they're looking at this dude and it's like, that's a pretty boy. I can't connect with that, you know? And
yeah.
then he takes off his shirt and he's completely ripped and he's like, you know, he rolls out of bed and it looks like somebody came over and sprayed him with a little gel mousse like right before. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you can't. I was watching this movie and I'm like, yeah, okay, but from the beginning I'm looking at the guy and I'm like, ah, come on, like he's totally ripped. He works in a factory. It's the future, you know. Everybody's, you know, living in mm-hmm. some sort of dystopian, you know, post chemical warfare world, you know, and everyone looks fucking fantastic. You know, and
well, I think it's I think that's probably a good point. I think you're right. I'm having two thoughts simultaneously, and my brain is going to melt.
Stop.
Total
Recall.
So I have to pick one. The looks depart thing. I think what's happening is that the girls are getting the eye candy that the guys have been getting for decades.
Yes, mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that.
I think that's what's happening, and then I think. As far as the not being able to connect and relate to these remakes of older movies, I think has more to do with the failings of the storytelling than it does with the looks of the actor, although I don't disagree that that could be a factor, but I think the larger thing is that, you know, just listening to the Evil Dead, the description where, you know, the original Evil Dead, I mean, had, and I'm not a huge Evil Dead guy, but it sounded, you know, it's clever. It's certainly more clever and has a sort of a richer texture where there's humor and horror and it's kind of satire. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
I'd say not the first one as much.
Not the first one, for sure.
The first one is more of a straight up, you know, horror movie.
Yeah, messed up horror movie. Yeah, for sure.
And so I guess just the fact that the franchise became this unique sort of voice.
Yeah.
And then this remake, from what I'm hearing, Paul, from you, is that the effects, it was mostly effects driven, and as far as story wise, it was kind of just, you know, a blunt object of just horror, right?
It's definitely a more modern, you know, horror feeling. Like, you know, it's bleaker, you know, than the originals were, you know, in a way.
I just think there's probably a simpler storytelling approach for more modern movies than there used to be.
Yeah.
One, because they have the crutch of special effects, and two, probably because, you know, it just becomes more studio-driven, I would guess.
Yeah.
I don't know,
I've been making a lot of movies lately, and I've got a funny thing about the, you know, about Christian's thing about how everyone's glamorous. I have a friend who just... we just wrapped a film, and she was trying to cast a bunch of guys who were supposed to be physicists.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she was looking for sort of unattractive people.
Yeah.
You know, and like she sort of spelled that out, and she didn't get any.
Wow.
She said she got exactly one overweight character, one actor who auditioned for the part. And, like, pretty much everyone who showed up, like, just looked amazing. It has sort of a lot to do with sort of who's in the acting game and the pipeline right now.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
like,
true.
That's the look right now.
Do you know, were they using a casting director? Is that how you got all your actors?
Yeah, she did a casting through basically a casting agency, yeah.
Huh. That's
It could be the agency, you know. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, you only can use what you get, and
I think you know, we've sort of as a culture moved more toward like a perfect looking people, at least as far as the people who are sort of outgoing and involved in the entertainment industry, you know, like
that's insanity, I'm not saying that Total Recall or The Thing hinges on the looks of, you know, whoever's in the lead, obviously.
Yeah,
but I
agree that there's something, you know, that
there's
was
something to that
more relatable about those originals, because I mean, especially with The Thing, I mean, look at the guys in that movie, you
exactly.
know
exactly.
They're all scruffy, they're bearded, you know, it just felt more real.
Yeah, and it's interesting because in the case of The Thing remake, it's mostly supposed to be guys, you know, and they're at the base and they've got beards, but, you know, they're wearing sort of like 80s sweaters, but they fit perfectly, and you know what I mean? There's a cinematography and a design there that doesn't take into account like the way things look in the real world, and it's all like everything's like super well lit, and you know, even though they've got scruffy beards, or one guy has like a really giant messed up beard, but it's kind of messed up in a
perfectly
Hollywood kind of way.
Messed up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
I think it's probably this sort of overriding story mission of escapism instead of telling a story. It's you know, it's that ideal escapism is the paramount driver instead of just what serves the story the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, escapism allows you to become absorbed into something, and you can only get absorbed into it if you can identify with it on some level, you know. And
right, yeah, I guess I should say that's the intent, but is not necessarily the result.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, that's the thing. I mean, that was like the one big thing where I was sitting in front of the TV, and Amy came home. She's doing her play right now, and she saw me watching the movie, and she's like, kind of, okay, you're watching this, and then I was like, I think I figured out the secret to why Schwarzenegger was kind of successful, and it's because he didn't demand a lot of the audience. He was like, I'm simple, and like, I'm not here to take away your women. Like, Corey, you said that, you know, women are getting the eye candy that they haven't gotten, and that's fine, and I appreciate that, but a woman is not going to be the driver to go see Total Recall. Like, when a guy...
You would be surprised. Audience, yeah, the audience breakdowns for a lot of these sort of bigger budget, you know, action-ish movies are falling more along a split demographic than they used to.
Yeah, but don't you think that's because people are taking that demographic with along with them? I mean, it's kind of been that way. And, I mean, maybe...
It may be a case of, like, sort of the cart, you know, getting ahead of the horse in a way. You know, like, people are assuming, well, you know, oh, you know, because we're putting these guys, you know, hot guys in there, that's what's increasing that, when really what's increasing is the fact that, you know, women are getting more hip to the genre and they're growing up with this stuff more. And,
that's
you know,
true too.
They have a different mindset than they did of, you know, a few years ago, where it's like, oh, this is boys stuff and this is girl stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm being a bit chauvinistic in my assessment, because I feel that, you know, I was just thinking it through and I feel like, okay, I'm a guy, I'm going on a date with a girl, and I go to see Total Recall, you know, and mm-hmm. she gets to look at Colin Farrell, but I'm sitting there and I'm like, she's not thinking about hanging out with me. She's thinking about Colin Farrell, right? I mean, which is, I guess, what women have had to deal with for a long time. So, but I just feel like...
Well, I'm hoping that she's thinking, well, he was so much better in Bruges.
Yeah, I would think so too, because I actually never really liked Colin Farrell up until I saw that movie, more because of his public persona than anything else. I just thought he came across like a total douche, but, you know, I don't know. It's interesting to me, because it obviously the Total Recall... I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's so much cool stuff in the movie, like visually and... technologically, like they have a chase scene with these magnetic cars, okay, mm-hmm. and you know the whatever freeways they're above or around the city, and the cars hover above the magnetic highway, right, and they can flip underneath, so they're going around, and you know whether you want to go take this pathway or that pathway, but they're floating, and it's this really good looking scene, but I was not caught up in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's almost like it belongs in another movie anyway, because you know it's the thing that I find funny about like sort of the like, technological dystopias is like how really awesome sort of the technology is for
yeah.
like just the everyday human being, you know?
Yeah,
and it's like this is amazing, and you're like wanting me to believe that it's like sort of a crappy reality. You know, I'm more along the lines. I think someone, you know, like Neil Blomkamp gets it right.
Yeah.
You know, where you've got like, the stuff I've seen from Elysium. You know, where like you've got.
That looks good.
Again, the technological, you know, elite, and they get all the cool stuff, and then you get everybody else who gets nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I can believe that. I don't really believe like this, like, you know. Future where like everyone has access to these like floating cars and everything like that, but they're poor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and that's what I guess the biggest thing that I can't get at is why is there no sense of tension in these movies? Why is there, I mean, beyond being able to maybe identify with whoever's in it, I mean, the thing, I just think it had too many characters like wandering around that you didn't really get to know. And you had the lead female, and while I've seen her in other stuff, and she's pretty, and she's a decent actress, she wasn't able to really draw me in as well as like say Kurt Russell or any of the other actors in the original movie. But what is the big thing that builds tension in Total Recall, and why am I so absorbed in Schwarzenegger and Kurt Russell and company and not in these movies? What is it that these guys are missing? Is it that they're just focusing on effects? Like how cool everything looks?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think it's, you know, that's not putting the story first. I mean, I think, you know, they used up all their clever, you know, that movie you're talking about with the magnetic cars, like,
yeah.
You know, apparently they burned through all the clever they had for that movie for that little thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, cool, you have magnetic cars flying around. Like, how about having a really interesting story? You know,
yeah.
Like, that's not... I mean, this is what drives me crazy about and why I'm probably not as big of a movie watcher as I was maybe when I was in college or whenever.
Sure.
Or even a TV watcher. It's like, you know, I feel like, you know, the... in the 90s for comics was kind of when it was very artist-driven, like with Image Comics and those artists, where it was all sort of flash, and it was the writer was secondary. It was just like, you know, just put some word bubbles around these cool drawings. Like,
yeah.
And that's, I don't think it's that bad, but I think that is the sort of, I think that we're on that side of the spectrum as far as movies, where it's all, it's you know, if you can make things look like Avatar, that's all that matters. Just make it dazzling.
Yeah.
And never mind the story.
Yeah, I think you're very right about that, especially the big budget thing, because, I mean, let's admit it, they are competing with, like, video games, which I guess is becoming huge now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, I mean, like, I posted on Facebook, my sister just sent me her old Wii, so we're, like, on the cutting edge now, you know, but...
Yeah, and, you know, interestingly enough, that Thing remake did coincide with the Thing video game
that
was released. So, you know, in a way, I feel like it sort of gets around to that whole, you know, that second wave of Batman movies, you know, the Schumacher years, you know, of, like, product coming before story.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean... Total Recall, a little different in the sense of, like, there wasn't really necessarily any other product that they were selling at that point.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I didn't see, like, a whole lot of tie-in stuff with it or anything. But, you know, I feel, at least in the case of The Thing, it's like they sort of took the original and they're just like, well, you know, this is a great idea, you know, whereas... The sequel to The Thing, or prequel, whatever you want to call it, didn't add anything new to The Thing. You know what
Absolutely
I mean?
Absolutely not.
And the nice thing about the Evil Dead remake was at least it felt like they were taking that concept and they were doing something new with it, you know?
Huh.
It wasn't like a vast change off of the original, but it was new, you know? They did take a new approach to it, whereas The Thing... just sort of felt like, okay, well, we're gonna give you the story, you know, that came before, and that's sort of generally my problem with prequels anyway, is because you kind of know how they're gonna end anyway.
Yeah.
You know, there was probably no tension in that Thing. If I were thinking about, like, that Thing remake prequel thing.
Yes.
Exactly. Uh-huh. I know. It's like the thing that killed the tension for me is knowing where it ends. It's like, okay, I know exactly what form that thing's going to end up in the end.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I know exactly where all of this is going. I know sort of that, you know, all of these people are going to die, you know. So in a way, it's like you're all of these characters are really just sort of sacrificial lambs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's no real chance for them because you know what's going to happen in the next movie.
I don't necessarily mind knowing what happens in the end, because I think for most good stories, it's really the journey. It doesn't really matter, like, kind of what happens in the end.
That's true.
I mean, it matters, but I mean, you know, knowing doesn't ruin it for me anyway.
Yeah.
But I think what you, Paul, what you were saying as far as it being a prequel, I mean, you know, obviously when the original Thing was made, there's a reason they told that story and not
right.
the story of what happened first, because the story they told is more interesting than what happened before.
Right.
So, you know, it's like you get the second best story, you know, second best is probably generous, but, you know, so it's like these prequels that kind of come later, it's like, you know, again, it's like, you know, you sort of have constructing backwards, because when the original movie was made at the time, they told the best story, or what they felt was the best story for that mythology.
Yeah.
I don't see why they didn't just go ahead and sort of, like, rip it off, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, just rip it off, call it something else, you know, do The Thing, but set it, you know, set it somewhere else. Don't set it in the Arctic.
That's really
do.
Interesting, because Dark Horse Comics, like, in the 90s, or maybe late 90s, they did a sequel to The Thing, and it took place in the jungle. And, where the virus had gotten out.
Yeah, there you go.
And I sort of remember it being I mean, thinking like, well, if it's in the jungle, you know, all bets are off at this point, you know.
It could be like that little parrot flying overhead.
It could be a tree. It could be anything. It could just take over the whole organism. But I sort of remember reading it, and I think I have it in a box still somewhere, that I remember kind of enjoying it and thinking, well, maybe this might not work as a movie, but I think it was okay. And it's really interesting that you say like that we have to know where the end is, because while I was watching the Thing prequel, I'm sitting there and going like, oh yeah, that's where that ends up. Oh yeah, that's where that ends. So they're following a map, and they don't really have any freedom to go their own way. But even if you didn't have freedom to go your way, there's a unique way to maybe twist things and be like, it ends up this way, but maybe the way you thought it was going to end up wasn't quite the way you thought it, you know what I mean, going to be.
Yeah.
And that takes really good writing, I guess, you know. And that's the thing is, I was extremely disappointed. I was, and it's funny talking about the Thing to friends. They're like, yeah, you know, it's well made. Like, if that's the best you got, like that's good enough.
It's
you know.
Well, let's see. All the pictures moved. Yeah. And everything was in focus.
It looks the lighting's nice. I think that's
a larger thing too, that I think studios feel they can get lazy with stories because most people are fine with that kind of stuff. Like you said, most people are like, well, the projection didn't jam.
Exactly. Well, and then that's what you have to think. I mean, what is the movie going experience to a lot of people? It's a chance to get the heck out of the house, maybe get away from the kids for a night, chill out and relax.
That's what I meant by escapism.
Escaping your screaming kids or your awful boss, and maybe just being able to sit in a chair.
The original Thing was made to fuck with your head. And you know, this is made as it is. It's made as sort of as an escapism thing, and it's a fun night. You know.
Yeah.
The original Thing was made not to be a very fun night.
Well, but that's the thing, is that I have more fun. I feel like I'm very different than other people, because there are movies that I found very compelling movie-going experiences that I can't recommend to people, you know? And that's my escapism is, you know, I mean, Corey, you're an actor. I was an actor for a long time, and a lot of what acting gave me was the ability to get up on a stage or in front of a camera and let those emotions out, like let the stuff out, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when I go to a movie, I like being fucked with, you know, maybe not every movie, but I like thinking and being like, whoa, what was that? Or that just blew my mind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right. Well, see, and that kind of goes back to my Verhoeven thing, you know, like if you, you know, back in the 80s or 90s, whatever, if you saw Paul Verhoeven's name on something, you knew that you were in good hands. You know what I mean? And, you know, when I look and I find a lot of these people, I don't necessarily know that I'm in good hands.
Yeah.
You know, the Evil Dead thing was nice because, you know, you did have Raimi and Campbell involved as producers, you know, so they were obviously going to be overseeing, you know, this first-time director's, you know, debut here.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a little bit of things to give me some confidence going in there. But a lot of the things that we're seeing now sort of are, you know, first-timers or people, you know, who are, you know, somewhat competent, but, you know, nothing, but haven't really distinguished themselves in any way. And so you don't necessarily know whether you're in good hands with a remake or not.
Well, it's interesting because this Len Wiseman guy, who I guess is married to Kate Beckinsale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, or was, I'm not sure if they got divorced. I mean, for what they were, and I think I rented them, I didn't see them in the theater. The first two Underworlds, I mean, that's escapism. You know what I mean? It's just like, I mean, a very basic escape. Like, I thought, okay, this was fun. I mean, it wasn't anything, you know, like mind-blowing, but it's vampires and werewolves. And look, there's Kate Beckinsale in a skin-tight, you know, leather outfit. That's fine, but it wasn't overly sexual. You know what I'm saying?
And he does that really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, is that what you expect out of Total Recall?
No, and you're absolutely
there
right.
You go.
But don't you think that somebody like Len Wiseman, and obviously just speculation on my part, would want to take a Total Recall? Or do you think at this point it's just like studios being like, this is what we're doing, we're going to pay you $5 million to do it, make it look really good? Like, do you think that like Len Wiseman or whoever was behind the Thing remake was like, I'm really psyched to be doing this, you know? Like,
don't know.
Yeah, so it's, I'm sure sometimes it is, and sometimes it's just a job.
I don't know. I think this was just a job for him. But, you know, one more thing about Kate Beckinsale. I mean, if somebody doesn't really cast her as the Wonder Woman villain in whatever Wonder Woman movie that they make, because as not great as the Total Recall remake is, she's kick-ass in it. She's just like, she's the villain, and she's, you know, maybe not as sinister as Sharon Stone was in the original, but she also plays through the whole movie, unlike Sharon Stone's character in the original, so.
Yeah.
But I'm like...
Who is Wonder Woman's enemies besides the cheetah?
Giganta.
Oh, okay.
And right. Then you've got a bunch of, like, Olympus people.
Olympus people. That's
the... the generic gods.
Always fall back on the generic gods.
Well, actually, I mean, her big enemy throughout the comics has been Ares, right?
Yeah.
The god of war.
Yeah. Well, did you guys ever read the George Perez, years?
No, I never did.
Oh, Corey.
I read some of them.
Did you read the first arc? The first arc... of the George Perez, and I think it's Greg Potter Wonder Woman. I have the first trade. Is fantastic, and I think it's hard to get now. But that would make a great movie, and that's Ares. And and it's interesting because I'd never really watched Xena, like Warrior Princess, and it's on Netflix. So I started watching the first episode, and I was like, oh, when my daughter gets a little older, this would be really cool for her, you know, because it's not. She's not overly sexualized. She's fighting. I mean, it's Wonder Woman. It basically was Wonder Woman.
It is. That's the fun thing about the Hercules like / Xena stuff is that it really was a very like sort of, you know, 70s rollicking adventure kind of a show.
Yeah, yeah. And wouldn't it be crazy if they did a Xena revamp before they got a Wonder Woman.
Before they got around to Wonder Woman.
I mean, it's just insane. I mean, have you guys seen, I guess there was a lot of chat on the online about, I guess they're doing a Wonder Woman hardcore porn XXX parody.
Yeah, I saw that.
And the image of the costume's better than the...
Yeah! It's like, than the one with
honestly,
the...
Honestly, the lighting in that shot and everything was superior to anything that I've seen, you know, them throw out and everything, too. Like, that is just sad. I mean...
it's really sad.
DC has really got to get their act together when, like, basically porn companies are shooting better versions of their things than, their legitimate people are.
Or they need to hire porn people to work on their stuff.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, that's bizarre to me. I saw that picture. And did you guys see that video, the Wonder Woman thing with the stunt guy who directed it and was like, I want to do the Wonder Woman movie, and it's her fighting Nazis? Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, I saw that. That was great.
It was great. And I'm like, Paul, you got to check that out because the guy does a really good job. And it's this, if you're out there on the internet and you haven't seen it yet, just look up like Wonder Woman, you know, video, and I'm sure that that's one of the things, God forbid, like that's going to come up. But, you know.
Your safe search on.
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly. Take the kids out of the room before you do that search. But, it was this really great short video, kind of in the vein of the Punisher thing that.
The one that.
Dirty Laundry.
Thomas Jane did.
Yeah, Thomas Jane
and,
did.
Tom and Phil Juano did, yeah.
Yeah, and she's fighting Nazis. And they eventually get outside, and you can see downtown LA in the background. So maybe it's Nazis in like 40s era Los Angeles. But, you know,
that's the Rocketeer.
Work. Yeah, the Rocketeer, exactly. That was fantastic. What are you guys thinking of? This kind of blew my hair back. Robert Redford in the Avengers. Like, any thoughts on that?
Sure. Why not?
I mean, I was blown away.
It's kind of awesome, you know? Tying, you know, Robert Redford, you know, sort of cinema icon in with this, like, sort of new thing. I feel like it's a kind of a neat little trick.
What's the last thing he's done?
Well, he just came out with the movie that he directed.
Oh, okay.
And I forget what it was called, but I think it was kind of a very political thing.
It's been a while since he's acted, though.
Yeah, where he's just acted? Yeah. I mean, but to me, that's just so interesting that they would get Robert Redford, you know, and in the 70s or 60s, if you had the wherewithal to really make a big budget Captain America and there was some respectability behind, that's who you would have cast, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, Captain America. Let's see.
You know, he did act in that. The movie is called The Company You Keep.
The Company You Keep. Yeah.
Yeah, and he did act in that, and he acted in his previous one, Lions for Lambs. But,
yeah.
Other than that, it's been like, you know, 2005 since he's done anything.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting to me because, like, the thoughts, like, what have you heard that he's going to play, like, like the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something, or?
He's supposed to be playing a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. It's
Agent Alexander Pierce.
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Does anyone know who?
That character which exists.
Oh, really?
I'm sure they're going to rework it to be, you know, I don't know if he's going to be over Nick Fury or what, I don't know.
He's going to show up in Captain America, The Winter Soldier, yeah. That's
Alexander Pierce is a character that actually exists in the comics.
Yeah, but he's more of a, you know, he's not like, he's like one of the soldiers, you know. He's just he's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. He's not like a director or anything.
Oh, that's interesting. Because my mind's like just swimming with the possibilities. Like, what if they did like some kind of future thing where it was like Captain America old, or like maybe he's the Red Skull, or like. You know, because his face doesn't want to play the Red Skull anymore.
Oh, really?
He doesn't.
Yeah, apparently he, I don't know if he had a bad experience or whatever, but he said he doesn't want to return. And imagine, because there was a whole, okay, now I know where I was going with this. There was a whole storyline, I think in the Mark Gruenwald days of Captain America, where they did the Super Patriot becomes Captain America.
Yeah.
And, you know, U.S. agent and all that stuff, where for anyone who doesn't know, there was a time in the 1980s where the U.S. government tried to take away Captain America's shield and his costume because they were saying, like, that's our property. And if you don't do what we say, you have to become
a U.S. agent. Basically.
Yeah, U.S. agent, whatever, an agent of the government. You have to do what we say. Blah, whatever. I lost my train of thought. Anyway, and so Captain America is like, F you. Here's the costume back, and here's the shield. And they give it to somebody else who, you know, not ruining anything. John Walker, that was his name, ends up going crazy and, like, killing people and being basically like the Punisher in a Captain America costume, right? But in that storyline, the Red Skull shows up, as he always does, and he clones Steve Rogers' body and puts his brain in Steve Rogers. So he's, like, dying, and he basically clones Captain America's body and puts his brain in the new clone. So he's, like, a super soldier. So my thoughts are that Robert Redford could be the Red Skull, older, maybe cloned from the original Captain America. I'm just spinning with this. I'm just letting it fly. What do you guys think? Huh? Not
could
bad.
Be. Could be. Yeah, could be.
Could be. Could
That's
work.
That would be something. That'd be like sort of the ultimate little sort of comic book shout out, you know? But what I think is kind of cool is just that, you know, Robert Redford, you know, back in his younger days, like, that's the dude who could have been Captain America. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so weird. I mean, can you imagine what Chris Evans is going through? He's like, oh my God, Captain, like you know, he'd just be so psyched. But the thing that disturbs me a little bit about it is that he's saying, like, he's the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I was kind of like, wait, wasn't Nick Fury kind of the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. or?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if maybe they'll have, like, Nick Fury leaves, you know, does one of his vanishing acts.
Oh, then, yeah.
Or maybe they're going to tie this into the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show in some way, you
that's
know,
true.
To explain the lack of Nick Fury. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's
true. But he's not going to be in that show, is he?
No.
No.
Nick Fury?
He doesn't do TV. He's too good for TV.
Yeah.
Robert Redford.
They'd have to have like the 7-second delay on everything that he says, man.
Oh, Samuel Jackson or Robert Redford or
Samuel Jackson because he's motherfucking Nick Fury, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that I was a little bit bummed about when they made the announcement, because I think at a press conference, Redford was like, "I am the head of S.H.I.E.L.D." And I was like, "Yeah, but it was kind of cool having an African American guy be like the head of, you know what I'm saying?" And now
I kind of would
have
wanted Maria Hill to take over if he left.
Yeah, that's true too. And then in the comics, she kind of becomes a bit of a hard ass and is kind of the impetus for that whole Civil War thing in a way. But going down that route, I mean, beyond Robert Redford as Captain America, hello, Rocket Raccoon? I mean, he's going to be in a movie.
Yeah, I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. It's going to depend so much on, you know, who they cast as that voice.
Yeah.
I know. I heard some rumors. I saw some rumors on Ain't It Cool, and one of the voices that they said that they were trying to go after was Adam Sandler, and I was like, oh.
In which case I would say
no, please, please don't, because I'm already like, I don't know what it is about Rocket Raccoon, because I read that, I remember picking up that comic, that 4-issue limited series, and I guess he started off as a character in the Hulk, right?
Yeah.
But then he got his own, which was drawn by Mike Mignola, and I remember loving it and thinking, like, for some reason, when I was younger, I had an affinity towards funny animal comics. I don't know. Animals, like, but the fact that the design, that some of the concept designs were released a week or two, like a week and a half ago, for Rocket Raccoon is just blowing my mind, you know? It's just like they're going to have a talking raccoon in a Marvel movie. Like, how awesome is that?
That is pretty hilarious. I don't know who should be the voice, though. Like, I don't even know who could do that.
Well, I think he has to have a little bit of, like, gravitas to his voice, because that's the thing, right? Rocket Raccoon's, like, sort of like a badass.
Yeah, they talked about Jim Carrey also, to which I'm more on board with than Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it would be cooler, honestly, if they could get someone... just like spitballing it, someone like Louis C.K.
Oh,
or something, you know?
That would be cool. Yeah, but he would probably, I mean, could Louis C.K. do the hard-ass thing, though? I mean,
I don't know. We'll see, you know? I mean, they just keep going with comedians and stuff like that. It'd be kind of cool if they just went with someone who just isn't necessarily known for comedy or even for voiceover work.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I mean, get Norman Reedus, for God's sake.
Uh-huh.
From Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, but that's the thing. The fact that they are looking at comedians now that I'm thinking of it, I mean, I hope they're not all looking at stand-up comics or, you know, improv comics or whatever. But if they are, is that character may be like the, hey, wisecracking funny animal, you know?
Yeah.
And that scares me.
Unless they go with Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, my God. That would be a good call. I could see Dice doing the, as long as he kept the chauvinism in his pocket, you know, I don't know.
Little furry pocket.
I mean, is it weird that I'm excited about Rocket Raccoon being in a... I mean, it shows me that Marvel's just like, F it. We're comic books, you know, we're into fantasy. Like, we're going to go all the way with it.
I like that they're sort of expanding out into, like, sort of their sci-fi, like, fantasy, you know, universe beyond the superhero stuff. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
And they're going beyond their sort of big iconic characters, which is, I mean, who would have ever thought a Guardians of the Galaxy movie?
Like, yeah, never. Never. Yeah. Not a hoax. Not a dream. Not an imaginary story. Like, I mean, that to me is just fantastic. Like, I'm actually psyched to see, like, what they do. I mean, Star-Lord in a movie? Yeah. What? I mean, I just remember the old Star-Lord one-shot that John Byrne did. That's the only, I mean, I've read one of the Guardians of the Galaxy trades, and I really liked it, but I never followed up. But, Yeah, I mean, God knows. And the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series, I mean, the future looks bright. I just hope that Iron Man 3 kicks ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks spectacular so far, so yeah. My hopes are high.
How do they explain the Mandarin not being Asian? Like, I don't... Why would he call himself the Mandarin?
I mean... apparently he's a...
he likes oranges?
From what I'm getting, he's a dude who basically is just sort of obsessed with, like, Sun Tzu and the art of war and stuff like that. So he's, you know... That's what it is that it's someone who is just obsessed with being a warlord, and this is the persona that he's developed, and that's their way of getting out of the racism box that they painted themselves into.
Well, yeah, when China's co-producing, you can't have a villain known as the Mandarin actually be Chinese or Asian, you know, that's so weird. But yeah, no, I'm excited for Iron Man 3. I mean, I wasn't too crazy about the second one, but after
I think they do have a little redeeming to do.
Yeah, they definitely did after Iron Man 2, and maybe some people would say the Hulk with the Incredible Hulk, but I liked the Incredible Hulk.
A good movie.
I thought it was a really good movie. I mean, and I think What's-His-Face gets, now that the new Hulk guy has shown up.
Is he going to be in the Iron Man 3?
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. The Hulk stuff is kind of it's weird. It seems like they were sort of gung-ho on it for a while, and now it's sort of fallen by the wayside.
What were they reporting, that Planet Hulk was going to be the next story?
I don't think that they were ever serious about that. But as the most recent thing I've heard with Ruffalo is that, you know, he's just like, yeah, there's not like a plan right now for a Hulk movie.
Which is so weird, because the Hulk sells a lot of toys, I think.
I think so too, and I think that there are good Hulk movies, you know.
Yeah.
I think they might be gun shy because they've had two movies that just haven't quite done it as far as
haven't quite, you know, connected. Although, I mean, seriously, like Ruffalo, like, sort of stole every scene, you know, from that Avengers. So.
But if you can sell just as many Hulk products by just having him be awesome in Avengers, why make a Hulk?
I get it.
Yeah, that makes sense, too. That makes sense. I just originally thought that report, I think it was Latino Review, kind of like broke it originally, where they were going to do like Planet Hulk. I thought that was bullshit from the outset, because there's no way that you're going to, first of all, Planet Hulk and World War Hulk, he's the Hulk all the time. There's like no Bruce Banner. Right. So you're going to have this CGI character walking around the whole time. And not only that, but you're not going to turn your cash cow Avenger. I mean, honestly, I think the Hulk outsells all the other Avenger toys. Like, I think, and every little boy that I've come across, whenever I say, like, oh, you know, Avengers, or I like comics, they're like, oh, my kid loves the Hulk, man. The Hulk. Mm-hmm. Like there's something primal about the Hulk that little Absolutely. Boys just connect to, you know, that smashing instinct or the testosterone or whatever, you know.
Yeah, well, I think everybody just kind of wants to, like, you know, see stuff blown up and smashed and stuff. I mean, it's like Mythbusters is like a big show for me, just because I love to see these guys, you know, like blow up a cement truck and stuff like that. There's something interesting about seeing these things that you see every day destroyed.
Yeah,
you
know?
And I think too, there's a cathartic part about Hulk too. Like if you get those foam fists that you can wear on your hands.
Oh yeah,
that's fun. You know,
those things are awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I mean. Because, so what's happening this year is Iron Man 3 and then Thor Dark World or something like that? Like Thor 2. And then next year is Captain America, right? And then are they going to start shooting Avengers soon?
They should be. I mean, my understanding is that one's, I think it's on deck for 2015 on the schedule.
Nice.
And Guardians of the Galaxy is next year also, right?
Yeah.
And Ant-Man, right?
Oh, Ant-Man.
Right. Yeah.
Don't you guys think there's a little bit of a glut? And then with DC stuff, I mean...
Well, DC stuff, what? Superman?
Man of Steel, yeah.
That's hardly a glut.
Well, I mean, apparently they're all gung-ho about Man of Steel, right?
It might feel like a glut after we see it.
It's great, but I mean, it's a single movie, you know? And, like, DC's just... DC, I wish that... I wish Warner Brothers would really get on board with, like, going with, you know, some of their secondary characters too, not just the Batman. I mean, you know, Arrow's doing fantastic for them over
Is it really?
On the CW. Yeah, yeah, it's the highest rated show on CW.
Do you watch it, Paul?
Yeah, I do. It's a good show.
I've only seen the pilot, and I was kind of like, okay.
It really grows. You know, it's essentially, you know, it's Batman for the television audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of Batman light. You know, but now that they've started bringing in some of the traditional comic book villains into it. You know, they've just introduced Roy Harper into the show. You know, it's a lot of fun. You know, it's a CW show, but it's a really well made one, and their lead is phenomenal. He's a perfect Green Arrow.
Really?
Yeah. He starts off very stiff, you know, and everything, but he does have like this sort of dry humor under everything that's really starting to develop as the show goes on. I find it a really fun show.
Huh. Maybe I'll have to catch up to it. I mean, the rumors are that they want to do Amazon too now, right? Which is Wonder Woman. They want to do like a Wonder Woman TV show again.
Well, yeah, good luck. I mean, the TV, and I guess I would be fine if DC, you know, managed to do, you know, basically sort of dominate television the way Marvel's dominating the movies, you know, like that's fine. But man, for God's sake, give me something Jack Kirby-esque on the big screen. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
I did see that they were hoping that Man of Steel would be the beginning of their movie universe.
Yeah.
Flash would be a great next step.
Yeah.
There's so many cool effects that you can do now. I think Flash would be a fantastic next step for them.
Yeah. Well, they thought that about Green Lantern. I mean, I thought a Green Lantern movie would be a slam dunk. I mean, you have Star Wars as sort of like your backdrop, you know, something to mimic or follow, and it just kind of like completely fell on its face, you know.
And I think that sort of goes down to what we started off in about, you know, when we were talking about the beginning about the remakes.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a remake, you know, Martin Campbell, you know, as the director, you know, a guy who's like best known for, you know, sort of the B-level Bond movies of the, you know, like really, that's who you're gonna trust your like your relaunch of a, you know, are your launch of a like hoped property, you know, like that's who you're gonna trust it to.
Well,
you know, I mean, I feel like it was just sort of doomed to mediocrity from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, did you guys? Oh, go ahead, Corey.
Well, just, you know, to piggyback on that, I mean, I only saw the trailer. I never watched the movie, but the trailers, I mean, just turned me off instantly when, you know, talk about eye candy. You know, like must show his six pack at all costs.
Well, the whole glowing costume thing was just like, really? Yeah.
And just when he's like, I know, right? You know that.
Yeah.
And what's sad about it, I mean, like, I think Ryan Reynolds was definitely not even the weakest part of that movie. You know, like, I mean, he
can't stand
I feel
that,
like
dude.
He did what he could with that thing, but I mean, it was just so all over the place.
Yeah, you know? it
like,
really
it didn't
was.
Didn't know what it wanted to be at all. It was trying to, they were trying, that to me felt like it was a movie that was like done by marketing, you know, 101, and like they were like, okay, we're going to appeal to this demographic by X, and we're going to be
well. It
to
also seemed like they were. I mean, I think it was another movie that they're playing a little bit to the fans. Like, let's put Sinestro, let's put, you know, Kilowog, let's fucking have a talking raccoon in there. You know what I mean? It's just, it's like, let's have Chip. Let's, you know, he's gonna be out in space, and then he's gonna be flying jets, and he's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be awesome. And it's just like, no, dude, just like one thing at a time. Sinestro, you know, it's just, you know, just freaking chill out. You know, it's Parallax, and just like all this crazy stuff thrown in one movie. I will say that when I was in Hawaii when I saw Green Lantern, and I didn't hate it as much as I thought I was going to. I was like, okay, I mean, they put stuff in there for the fans, and that's why I didn't hate it, but it was not a good movie. You know, I was expecting so much worse is what I should say, you know.
Yeah, but let's face it, adding more ingredients doesn't necessarily make for a better dish.
You're absolutely right. But it's interesting that you mentioned DC picking the director, because you know the rumor coming out of WonderCon, right? That Bruce Timm, he left the animation division and he's working on quote unquote personal projects, and people are speculating that he might be doing something maybe for the live action DC universe. Like, maybe they're finally giving him a shot at doing, you know, Justice League the movie.
I'd like to see someone with that sensibility get a hold of one of these properties.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Oh, you know what I mean?
I think their animation stuff is probably some of the better superhero stuff.
Yeah.
Comics included that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. To see Bruce Timm direct or write or produce a live action Justice League movie, I mean, can you imagine? You know, but there's also a part of me that's just like fanboy hoping, speculation, because
right, it could be,
you know,
could be. I can't accept that he's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the perpetual state that we find ourselves living in, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that, you know, I mean, not to speak ill of Bruce Timm, but whenever I see him at a convention like Comic-Con, and this could just be Comic-Con because that's the only convention I ever really see him walking around, he does not look like a happy dude. He's got a frown on and he seems a little bit stressed. And
I think he's one of those people that just have that face, because I've seen him on interviews too, and it's just like, I'm sorry, you have to be on TV right now. Like,
yeah, I know. He just doesn't seem happy, and there's a part of me that's like, well, you know, the fanboys are like, oh my God, he's directing the Justice League, and maybe he's just like really like, I've had enough.
I what he's saying, working on personal projects. His personal project is like he's in Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly. He's just chilling out and, you know, not looking at any DC anything for a long time. So that's going to be interesting to see how Man of Steel plays out, because they're just nowhere. I mean, after the last batch of Batman movies, and then, you know, what have they got? I mean, I'd like to see a Flash. But I mean, speaking of the Flash, I mean, you know, this is going into like a whole other thing. Carmen Infantino died, right? Carmine Infantino died.
Yeah.
But you guys convinced me, like, and I've had other people tell me that they really liked, oh, Jeff Johns. I was listening to an interview with Jeff Johns on the Fat Man on Batman podcast. And I guess like one of his, you know, Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman, and which is a really good podcast if you're into like Batman and comics. But he had Jeff Johns, and, you know, they were talking about The Flash, and Jeff Johns is like, The Flash is cool, like, The Flash is... And I'm like, really? He just runs fast, I mean, and vibrates. You guys got... Paul, what makes me want to go see a Flash movie? Like, I never was really into The Flash.
Yeah, he's got first of all, I think he's got sort of an interesting rogues gallery, you know? Uh-huh. Like, he does have interesting villains going on, and... The idea of, like, someone moving and living at a completely different speed than, you know, than everything else, visually, that's just appealing. I mean, that was one of the one things I always remembered about, like, reading the Flash comics. It was just like, okay, you know, the whole thing is, yes, he runs fast, but, like, the way that every artist sort of interprets that, like, really brought out a bunch of spectacular... panels and things. I mean, I remember there are issues of Flash that visually just sort of like blew my mind and made me think, like, huh, I've never thought about this that way. Like, you know, the vibrating to go through the walls and things like that. You know, like, what does that look like? You know,
I've always kind of had a thing for like speedsters or whatever, if you want to call them.
I think the thing that
sort of like solidified it for me was an issue of X-Factor with Quicksilver in it when Peter David was writing it.
Oh yeah.
And there was one issue where he explained why he's always such a jerk.
Yeah.
And he was like, imagine, he's like, you know how you get annoyed when you're at the end of a line, like at the bank teller's line, and you know, there's this long line of people, and you know, somebody's like, you know, or you're at the grocery store and somebody's taking out coupons, and you know, and he's just listing all these things about how annoying it is when you're just sitting there, and he's like, that's my life 50 million times more every second of my life.
I have to
put up the whole world works at that like infuriating pace that is too slow.
Yeah.
And And it just, I just thought that was so cool. Like, just what a fun like thing to play with.
It was.
And one of the cool things about the Flash is that, like, you know, I mean, he's got all the speed in the world, but it seems like he's just never fast enough. Like, he's still got a human mind, you know.
Yeah.
And he, it's like he has to. His body can almost move faster than he can think, and it's just a. I think it's again visually, it could be really cool, and I really think that you know, Barry Allen is a. I assume they would start with Barry Allen.
I hope
they could do a Wally West. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, Barry Allen was a really cool character, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think in a certain way, I mean, he's like a police scientist. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned the way he's been drawn, because I kind of half-heartedly mentioned Carmen Infantino, and obviously the guy's got a huge legacy beyond, mm-hmm. you know, the Flash and, like, you know, everything that he's done for comics. But I believe that he was still drawing the Flash in the 80s, which is when I kind of, like, picked up the Flash, because I remember he was, like, accused right before Crisis. Like, he had mm-hmm. been accused of murdering the Reverse Flash. Or something mm-hmm. like that. And there's a really good sequence where the Reverse Flash figures out, or they find out that he's Barry Allen, and that he's going to get married on his wedding day, and mm-hmm. where he actually kills the Reverse Flash. And he's racing Reverse Flash to try and get to his wife, because the Reverse Flash is like going to like do some kind of karate chop on her neck at like supersonic speed.
Right.
And that's what happens. Like, the Flash catches up to the Reverse Flash and grabs him by the neck to stop him, like, at the last second, and they twist the wrong way at super speed, and he breaks his neck. And I remember the drawing in that, the way that he would draw the Flash running. That's funny that you mentioned that, because, like, my memory had kind of stored away up until now, that how great, like, he would draw the Flash running, like, in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I don't know if throughout his whole career, but there was that blur that used to, and it was, like, zigzaggedy, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Infantino did do a really good Flash, you know, and yeah, I guess you've convinced me. It would be interesting to see something like that if the right filmmaker would pull it off, you know?
Did you ever see the Flash TV series in the 90s?
I did, I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I kind of did too.
Yeah, I did too. I liked it a lot. That's John Wesley Shipp, right?
Yeah,
The Flash and... They sort of, you know, combined the Barry Allen and Wally West characters, into that one. But
was it the character though, Barry, or was it?
It was Barry, but like he had some of the Wally West things, like having to eat constantly to
maintain
your metabolism and things like that. Which, you know, that's a cool little gag, and I think that's cool. What I always liked about Wally West is that he was sort of like one of the first superheroes I can remember who basically didn't have a secret identity, you know? He's the Flash, you know? He's Wally West, he's the Flash, you know? Everyone knew Wally West was the Flash.
Well, yeah, and the whole... And what I really liked during the Teen Titans when Wally West was Kid Flash was the whole gag that his powers were... Well, gag or whatever you want to call it, that his powers were slowly killing him. That his excess increased metabolism was like every time he used his powers, it would take some time off of his life, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
That was a fantastic bit.
That actually came from Wally Wood's, Agents of...
Oh, the Thunder Agents?
Thunder Agents, yeah. They had a speedster on there who basically every time he used his powers... It caused him to age at a accelerated rate in relation to everybody else.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
But since characters don't age in comic books,
No, they actually. I think with the speedster, they actually went through like two or three of the different characters who had that power.
It was in the Thunder Agents. I've always wanted to read those because I heard that they're really good, the Thunder Agent books. And
I think that it's being relaunched by IDW, I heard.
Oh, like new ones or not?
Yeah, new ones, yeah.
I want to check out the old ones, but it's interesting. That's cool. Like, you guys have convinced me. Maybe I would go see a Flash movie as long as it didn't look like Donkey you know, donkey piss or whatever. I mean, I just, you know, you never know. You
go
see
to the director. Don't go with the visual.
Don't make it look like donkey
piss. Yeah. We're going to need some new storyboards.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. I'm on board with the Flash thing, and Carmen Infantino is great for making those comics look fantastic for all those years. I don't know, anything else we want to touch on? We're at about the hour mark, or should we wrap it up and save some good stuff for next week or the week after?
Yeah, why don't we wrap it up? But it was a cool touch and base with you guys again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We must agree to do this more often.
Quite.
Cool. All right, well, this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn, and that's Corey Blake, and that's Paul Edwards. And you can't see me pointing at the Skype screen, but I'm doing it. And thanks for joining us, and check us out next week.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
I'm doing part-time. Part-time fanboy.